thank you for joining us for Embracing the Real podcast. This is episode 3, and today we are going to really talk about suicide prevention. This is a word that a lot of people avoid. They don't even want to mention or even bring up in conversation, but it's time. And so I wanted to kind of just introduce who we have here today with us. I am Deb Price. I am a licensed counselor, and I currently help manage one of our programs here at Willowbrook, where we provide mental health care. We also have Livia Cranford. She is a student here in Carroll County, and we are beyond thankful that you came and that you're willing to share your story and kind of just give us real life conversation about what suicide can bring to a family and how it can impact those around. And then we're also blessed to have Dr. Michael Lowley, a psychiatrist here within our Willowbrook system, who will also be a part of our conversation today. So we really hoped that we could just kind of start by just hearing, you know, why is this topic so important to you, Olivia?
I lost my brother to suicide in 2014. Mm-hmm. I was in third grade. He was 22. I was 9. Mm-hmm. As I became more aware of the word suicide and it became such a permanent part of my life, I started to realize how it's just not talked about. It's mm-hmm. just not talked about. And people really have a hard time, like, stepping out of the comfortable, and the comfortable is, you know, placing a mold on what a suicidal person should look like.
Yeah. Who do I even pay attention to?
Right.
Who should I be aware of? And so, Dr. Lowley, I'm curious if you might have a couple of statistics or maybe some information, because what we do know is that from teens, the ages of 12 to 17, suicide is the second leading cause of death. Only second to motor vehicle accidents. So we're not talking 20th on the list. We are talking the second leading cause. Yeah. And so for those of you that question, is it worth speaking about or why would you have a podcast about suicide? It is time. This is unacceptable that suicide is the second leading cause of young people because we're not doing enough about it. So what can you share with us, Dr. Lowley, about some other stats and information?
Thank you, Ms. Price. No, I mean, I think this is the reason, unfortunately, that this conversation isn't taking place enough. As you said, between ages 10 to 24, this is the second leading cause of death. And let's put some context here. That is more than cancer, heart disease, AIDS, birth defects, strokes, pneumonia, flu, and lung disease combined. Mm. And if we want a daily human cost, there every day in this nation at the moment, the estimate is 3,700 young people in grades 9 to 12 attempting to take their own lives. And I think the significance of this is all of the large surveys about suicidality have shown us that 4 out of 5 individuals who go on to make a successful suicide attempt give some indication that it's on their mind, that their mental health is moving in that direction. And therefore, this is a conversation that it's absolutely imperative to have. Mm-hmm. It crosses, of course, there are some groups at greater risk than others, but it really crosses mm-hmm. gender, ethnic, cultural, and national boundaries has been an issue of prime concern. And that's why I think we're so blessed to have Olivia with us today, because I think people get numbed to statistics and professionals such as myself and Ms. Price talking about this issue. And I think it's so important to hear about the human cost on an individual level of exactly, you know, what suicide can do to an individual, but even more so the people who love them, who have been so close to them and also working through that experience.
So Olivia, you know, Dr. Lowley just talked for a moment about suicide really knows no socioeconomic status, no culture, no race, no nothing. And so, you know, will we eliminate suicide? Hopefully one day, but we certainly can do a much better job than second leading cause. And so I'm curious, you know, did you see any signs that your brother was even capable of such a decision?
I mean, not really. I was 9 years old. I mean, I didn't see anything. Mm-hmm. He was outgoing. He was on the football team. You know, he actually went to West Georgia. But before that, he went to Ohio State. Mm-hmm. And he was so kind and happy I mean, that's the best word to describe him. He was happy. He was mm-hmm. funny and mm-hmm. goofy and like yeah. really, really kind. And it's just, it's not expected at all.
Yeah. And so I think that's important that we talk about for
right,
a few minutes
exactly.
today is those that we would possibly least expect to even consider suicide as an option are oftentimes those that we need to really have the conversation with. And it feels weird. You know, you look happy, you appear happy, you get decent grades, you have friendships, these types of things. But what we know about those that have attempted suicide and then can then actually go on to talk about it with those that ask the key questions, they talk about some things that didn't exist. They didn't have access to. So
right.
despite good grades, despite, you know, athleticism or all the things on the outside that make us think, oh, they're good.
Yes.
We don't have to think about them. They tell us that, you know, they didn't have a trusted person to go to.
Mm-hmm.
So they maybe had acquaintances. Maybe they had a ton of people around them. But someone that they could truly trust, they didn't have someone like that. And so, you know, maybe we can kind of all think about this and talk about this, but Do we think that the typical teen or the typical high schooler, you know, that you might go to school with, or even, you know, someone in your practice, Dr. Lilly, you know, do they feel like they have a trusted adult that they can go to and share their innermost thoughts to?
Well, I definitely think that my brother did. He did have people that he trusted. So many people loved him. But I feel like just with, you know, his surroundings and mm-hmm. seeing that nobody talks about it and seeing, mm-hmm. you know, what happens when somebody says that they're depressed or they're hurting and then they get called dramatic and, you know, all mm-hmm. of these things, you know, I think that was the thing that kept him from speaking out.
Mm. Because if I actually admit that I have
right.
a need, what would they think?
Yes.
Mm. I think it's a very typical consultation that I see in my clinic, and school is the intersection of, you know, mood, it's the intersection of family life, friend life, and, you know, a global way to look at, okay, if I'm a teenager, how well am I functioning? And for an outsider, and including parents, how well is my kid doing at school is something that can often be a sign that things are off. And I cannot count the number of consultations I have every month where a parent brings their son or daughter to clinic to talk about falling grades or problems with academic performance. And then we get to the question of suicidal thoughts. And that young person will disclose in clinic for the first time that life has got so bad that they haven't wanted to exist.
Mm-hmm.
And parents inevitably, a lot of the time, are completely shocked, mm-hmm. tearful, not knowing what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a privilege that I can be part of that process sometimes. And I think we're blessed in clinic that we see people who have come for help and have probably had a degree of conversation to get to that point.
Mm-hmm.
But by far my experience is that that is a dialogue that's not necessarily happening between kids and parents. Mm-hmm. And then in the case of trusted friends, trusted, you know, same age peers in class, sometimes that's where the communication breaks down and things sometimes get a little lost.
Yeah, I think it's important that we talk about, especially as we kind of continue to discuss different things in this podcast, you guys, Youth Mental Health First Aid tells us that people will wait up to 10 years to ask for help. So if we think about that for just a second, I may start to have feelings of inadequacy, or I'm not good enough, I don't have enough to do this thing, people think I'm great, I look great, but I really don't think I am. All these types of thoughts, and they grow. And a lot can happen over the course of 10 years to where what was just sort of a fleeting thought or every once in a while sporadic thought now becomes all the time. I don't have worth. Tomorrow's not worth sticking around for. Who would even care if something like this were to happen? And if I don't have that trusted person that I can go to share this with and to ask for help, that can be all consuming. And that can get to the point where it really does appear to be a solution and an option. And so I want to make sure that those that are listening to this understand the earlier, the better.
Right.
If I had a fever and a pain in my heart, I would immediately go to a doctor and ask for help because it's out of my scope, right? I'm not a doctor. I don't know what these symptoms mean. I need someone who does know what these symptoms mean to tell me what to do. And unfortunately, we treat mental health so differently when in fact it is the exact same. If I'm starting to have thoughts that are defeating or less than encouraging and optimistic and the things that we all hope to have, if I'm starting to have those types of thoughts, the earlier the better. And so I kind of wanted to just sort of, you know, ask the question and us kind of talk about, you know, have we noticed a decline in maybe friends at school, Olivia, or, you know, a decline in people in the clinic or even in the programs that I help manage too, in terms of, you know, they waited so long before they finally said, I can't do this by myself. And I'm just curious, you know, do we see people in our, and, you know, in the hallways at your school or, you know, friendships that you have or other people that we've come in contact with, are they waiting too long to ask for help?
I definitely think that I have come into contact with a lot of people that have asked for help, and I think that's really great. But usually, you know, these people that I've seen, they've already self-harmed. Mm-hmm. They've already, you know, gone to the extent where they feel so much less than others, and it's taken too long. So yes, I do see that. Mm-hmm. I do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, again, we go to the dentist twice a year because we want to prevent things. We want to stay on top of it and keep our, you know, our dental care looking nice and white and pretty. And we treat our mental health with such less reverence and with such less importance, don't we?
Well, I'm English. I don't go to the dentist ever. So, I mean, look at my teeth. But I mean, I'd say I have a binary experience in clinic. I think on one hand, people are coming in sicker and with a greater burden of distress because of having waited to seek help for so long. Mm. But then I have people come in and say, hey, you're the English guy. You treat my girlfriend's best friend. And I think at least that says to me that there is some kind of dialogue that help can be normalized. And I think when I hear small moments like that, I am filled with a momentary lift and a little bit of hope.
Well, yes. And I, all of my friends, you know, they're not necessarily depressed but mm-hmm. they regularly see a counselor. And I think that's a great thing that should be normalized mm-hmm. to just go see someone to talk to that mm-hmm. isn't your family or your friends. Mm-hmm. When I found out that they are all seeing counselors and we all talked about it and laughed about it, mm-hmm. how we were originally thinking that this was kind of embarrassing and, you know, we didn't talk about it. And now we realize it should be more normalized.
Yes. Yes, and we're starting to see school systems increase the attention to counseling and services that are provided. So, you know, Willowbrook specific, we have contracts with school systems to where, you know, therapists go into the classrooms and into the hallways so that kids don't have the excuse, well, I don't have a ride, or I can't get there, right. or I don't have time. Well, if it's during the middle of your school day, you're a captive audience, you know? And so there's beginning to be almost mandates and requirements at the school level that their emotional and mental health are addressed. So we are absolutely seeing movement and progress towards talking about it more and spending more attention on things like mental health and suicide prevention and those types of things. So 100% there are, you know, active things moving forward. You know, another thing that I was hoping we could talk about today too is people are sometimes afraid to say the word suicide. It's, you know, especially if you don't work in the field or it's not something that you think is in front of you on a day-to-day, you were hesitant to say the word suicide. And, you know, prior to this, we were talking about, you know, someone in the community who was appalled that the word suicide was mentioned in a public setting, and how could you? And oh my goodness. Right. So we wanted to kind of talk about that for just a moment because, guys, the reason that suicide has grown to the extent that it has is because we're not talking about it. This myth that if I say it, it might happen. If I plant the seed, then someone then will get the idea that now they can. And we want to really put that myth to bed as loud as we can say it in this podcast. It actually has the opposite effect. The more I discuss it, the more I talk about it, the more I bring awareness to it, the less likely someone is to see that as an option. And I need you to hear that in this discussion, because the quiet and the private is what is allowing this epidemic to grow.
Yes.
So I don't know. What do you think?
I think that we need to be in a place in our society where it is comfortable to go to someone and talk to someone. If we don't talk about it at all, it could be a lot harder to go and speak to someone because you don't know what their stance on it is. Mm. You know, if we have an environment where people are comfortable with it, people will talk. People will say how they're feeling. It will happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you've seen witness to the just the comfort that comes from admitting and talking about mental health with your friends, you just mentioned.
Yes.
And the fact that we could all find community and connection, and the fact that we all need support.
Yes.
No one is free of any kind of, you know, perfection.
Yes.
And we all at times have thoughts about all kinds of things.
And, and since I've spoken out, a lot of people have, you know, even DM'd me on Instagram talking about their story and how it affected them. And it just shows that if you talk about it, people will feel more comfortable with you as an individual. If you make it known that you are more comfortable and that you understand and talk about personal experience, people will reach out.
If I'm interested, I was recently working, very sadly, a couple of weeks ago with a 13-year-old girl who just lost her father to suicide and had actually experienced some horrible bullying at school after the fact, saying she was from a crazy family, that she should go to a mental hospital, and lots of whispering. And and I was just interested whether you as a family have been stigmatized because you've been through the pain of suicide. I'm sorry, it's a heavy question that I did not prepare.
No, you're right. Well, this specific story was probably fourth grade, and I was at a summer camp. I didn't really like to talk about it, you know, my loss, but I brought it up at one point about losing my brother, and, you know, the boy there was very adamant about making it known that it was my fault. And that nobody does it without a purpose, and I was I was the purpose. I was the reason that my brother took his life. And I remember being so mad, and I definitely acted a little crazy, but
You responded to him.
Yes, I did respond. I did respond, and you know, if I could take that moment back, I would. I should have, you know, spent more time talking to him because I assumed that there was something going on with him and not, you know, just saying those things to be mean, I hope.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think it's an amazing point that you bring up. Not everybody's going to have this level of understanding or knowledge, which begs the reason to talk about this even more. Oftentimes, our family members and those that are closest to us actually prolong people's lives longer than it would have had they not had people that they cared about, you know, maybe out of guilt or maybe out of such love for their family members that it prolonged their decision to take their life. And the thing is, we don't have the privilege and the luxury of asking people like your brother, why?
Right.
You know, so that's what makes suicide so hard and so different than other deaths is because, you know, we don't get to see the preempt a lot of times.
Yes.
And oftentimes the reason is never discovered.
Right.
You know, there's not a note found. There's not a conversation that was had prior. And so you are left with a lot of unanswered questions. And so for those of you that are listening to this that are survivors of suicide, it is different. And please let no one tell you different. and it does come with a whole nother layer of just grief and an understanding. And so for those that maybe it's fresh, I know that, you know, we've had conversations where those even close to us in this room have lost people very recently to suicide. Now is the time. When we say start early, when we say ask for help, when we say go, now is the time to ask, to speak to a trusted professional. When you do have the questions that are fresh and that you do have the opportunity, because if you don't, those thoughts grow into other things. This is a very alarming statistic and a very alarming fact, but I did want to make sure that we talked about it on this. When you know someone close to you that has taken your life, Unfortunately, you are now 7 times more likely to consider suicide as an option for yourself. So if you have a hero or someone close to you who took their life, now you are 7 times more likely, which begs even more the reason to talk about it and to ask for help and to seek professional intervention, because the likelihood goes up that high. And really what we know of that is just because if someone that I loved and someone that was so important and special to me thought that that was an okay decision, why couldn't that be for me as well? And so we want to dispel that, and we want to talk about why it's not a healthy option and why there are so many other choices that are out there. And so without that dialogue and that opportunity, unfortunately people, and so that's why we see clusters of communities and areas have higher spikes in suicide, is because of that factor. You are then 7 times. So for those that maybe that's a fresh fact or a fresh piece of information that you'd never heard of, I hope you heard it, because we don't want to see this pandemic, and that's what it is, you guys. It is an epidemic that we don't want to see it grow. Yeah. Okay. So, you know, being mindful of our time together, you know, what do we do about it? You know, what are our options? And so I was hoping we could spend the last, you know, bit of our time together just talking about, what do I do? You know, if I myself personally am having thoughts of taking my life, or I know someone who is having thoughts, how do I help? Because we're not all licensed counselors. We're not all psychiatrists. You know, we don't have the professional training that a lot of others do. So what do I do if I know someone? So perhaps we could just talk about that for a few minutes. And, you know, to begin with, we certainly want to make sure that you don't put on the hat of a counselor if you're not professionally trained.
Right, yes.
You can be a friend. You can be a loved, supported person. But if you're not a professional, please be careful that you don't get in and over your head and begin to have conversations and support people that are way past your area of understanding. So, right. Livia, maybe you could talk about what that's been like for you, or what you could suggest to someone who you know that might be, you know, just dealing with this.
Well, I think that the best thing if you're struggling is, you know, to seek out someone that you are comfortable with, so that then they may seek out professional help for you. And if you don't have anyone that you feel like comfortable speaking to, then there's hotlines, and you could go somewhere, and you could do it yourself. So,
okay. Yeah. So, yeah.
I mean, I think it's important just to think of what the early warning signs of this can be. And I think for parents, this could be, you know, is your kid outgoing and suddenly they're spending all their time in their room, much more isolated, not enjoying the things they usually enjoy, not spending time with friends, maybe more moody or irritable. Sometimes extreme sadness can come out as anger. Or changes in appetite, not taking care of, you know, ourselves in the way that we normally would. In older teens, as someone who is usually pretty straight-laced suddenly started vaping, or is alcohol going missing around the house, or are other uncharacteristic behaviors taking place, and then stepping back and thinking, okay, you know, has someone been missing from class for a while? Is someone missing from cheer or football practice? And I think, and then it's on a micro scale, certainly, you know, from my experience, I would say, never underestimate the power of a simple kind word in the hallway.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I think when we have no idea about other people's internal experiences, I think just saying, are you okay? How's your day?
Yes.
Can really make the world of difference, and people can take that into their hearts, and down the line when they're in a really bad place, it can just make really the world of difference.
I agree. Yes.
And to not be afraid to ask a friend or someone that you suspect is struggling, not to be afraid to ask the question straight to the point, are you having thoughts of killing yourself?
Right.
Exactly. What we know is that if you dance around it, if you skirt around the question and you don't ask straight towards the topic, they have reason to say, I'm okay. I'm fine. I'm normal. Whatever the case might be. And so again, through research, but also just through testimony, it's okay to ask the question straightforward. Are you having thoughts of that? Are you having thoughts of taking your life and killing yourself? Because I want to be a friend to you and connect you up with someone. Or I want to make sure that we keep you safe and get you connected to something that will keep you safe into tomorrow.
Right.
And again, if we're afraid to say the word suicide, me asking you to ask the question, are you going to kill yourself, probably seems even more scarier. Second leading cause, you guys. And so we've got to do something different if we want a different outcome. And I surely hope that it doesn't take a close loved one or family member to take their life to get your attention.
Exactly.
You know, we're sitting here with Olivia, and she is a walking testament to what this feels like. But I would imagine you wish you had a different reason to be here today.
Yes.
Can I actually ask that question, Olivia? What did it feel like?
Yeah. I mean, it was absolutely heart-shattering to lose my brother, and just to be without answers for so long. And you know, there's things that we could say, well, maybe that was it, or maybe that was it, but there's nothing that will ever give us a clear answer.
Yeah.
And you know, that was hard to deal with. It wasn't like it wasn't expected at all. Yeah. And I think that that was the hardest part.
Yeah.
Were you angry?
I was angry because I felt like, you know, to me, a person that isn't experiencing these things, I was like, why did you not reach out? We have shown nothing but love to you. We have shown nothing but, you know, care for you.
Yeah.
And you didn't reach out, but it is not that easy.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's definitely things that we could have done to make it easier that we didn't do and that people in our society don't do.
So let's start with asking the question. Even if it seems outlandish and totally preposterous, still ask, because the best that they can say is, quit being so silly, at least I asked.
Right. Okay?
When we talk about asking for professional help, that might come by way of going to your parent first, or going to your spouse first, or someone that you work with, and they can help get you connected. But, you know, again, we would never perform surgery if we're not a trained physician.
Exactly.
We would never be a counselor to someone if we're not a trained professional. And so we just ask you guys that are listening to this today, it's okay to connect to others. They're out there. And so one of the resources that certainly exists is Willowbrook provides a free screening. It's just a free list of questions that we want to ask you. And we even do it over the phone. So you don't even have to come and look at someone in the face. But just to get on the phone and let someone ask you some key questions to kind of determine, how can we best help you? How can we best connect with you? And so that number is 770-812-3266. And it's answered around the clock. So there's never a day or an hour of the day that someone won't pick up that line and talk with you. But maybe talking on the phone's too intimidating, or maybe it's too scary to think about doing that. And so there are other resources, like you can text. And so literally, if you were to text #741741, that will be answered by a live professional counselor. And we actually tested this out just to see, is this for real? And we went back and forth with a professional counselor about 40 different times. They would say something, and then we would text back, and then they would text about 40 times. And it was very sound advice, very sound direction, but it let us know that if talking to someone's too scary at first, maybe texting is enough for right now.
Okay.
So #741741. You have professionals at schools, school counselors, administrators, teachers. If you're listening and you are, you know, in a workplace, go to your supervisor, go to your human resource department, go to a trusted adult that you know will listen and will have the resources to connect you up. It's okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So any other just last thoughts? If someone's listening to this today, Olivia, who is kind of on the fence about reaching out and asking for help, but who has been struggling in silence for a while, what do you say to them?
I say that you should definitely ask for help, definitely talk to someone. There's so many different options for you. If you don't feel like you're comfortable with anyone, you can talk to complete strangers. Mm. There's always someone there out there to help you.
Mm. Always.
Always.
Yeah. Yeah. Believe it or not, there are those out there who are so supportive and who are so caring and who want to help. So even if you've been turned down, or you've had a negative experience, go to the next one. Go to the next adult until you get what you need.
And I would just say that I work with so many survivors who come out the other side and realize that the attempts they made, the notion of suicide for them was very much, would have been a permanent solution to a temporary problem. And I think most sources of our human suffering can be mitigated. And I would just urge, you know, anyone based on my lived experience with my patients to seek help. And I think let's not underestimate parents, what we can do to remove access to the means of suicide in the home. And we already know that, you know, if we secure weapons, be mindful of whether our kids are alone, give people a little bit of extra support in moments of heightened distress, those kind of primary preventative interventions can really make a world of difference as well, while waiting for some, you know, more formal, you know, medical experience trained help. But it's been great to be here with you guys this afternoon. Olivia, it's been, you know, wonderful to hear your story, and you know, it really brings life to something that, and, you know, when we hear the human cost of living through suicide and suffering suicide as a family, you know, I'm just so grateful for your courage and for being here with us, and I really appreciate it as a physician who works with this population every day.
Thank you.
This has value. This will touch someone that would otherwise never have. Yes, thank you so much. So once again, if you have any kind of questions or thoughts or feel like it's time to ask for help, please call 770-812-3266. And we appreciate your time today.